Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back to another edition of Leave It In Ring Radio. I love your tongue tied over here, man. Tired. Anyways, welcome back. This is your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. Felipe Leon's not on with us this week because tomorrow night he's got the two-minute round that he hosts. It's an all-dedicated female show, so he didn't make it with us today. I asked him, but he was like, I can't, man. You know, he doesn't want to overstay on Leaving Ring Network. You know, doesn't want you guys to get sick of him and stuff. So it's just me for right now. Gabriel Montoya should be coming on shortly. He's getting off of work, and then he'll be jumping on, and we're going to talk some boxing. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, some sad, really sad news about Bobby, the schoolboy Chicón, passing away this morning. This morning I got the call, and it was Felipe that gave me a ring and told me about it, and said, you know, the report was that he fell and hit his head, and, you know, and he passed away, man. I had the pleasure to meet him. I had the pleasure by my friend, my really good friend, Candy Man, who's a cut man, really good cut man. And I know Mike Rodriguez knows him. All the cut people know him. Anybody in the fight business knows Candy Man. He's a really good guy. And this was like back in, God, I want to say like 2012, maybe. I would have to go back and check. And, you know, I went out to Fresno, California, because that's where he was headed. He was heading out to go see some amateur fights. And so Candyman called me. I was like, hey, man, why don't you come out and meet Bobby? Because he knew that I was a massive fan. You know, one of my favorite fighters, one of the top guys that I would talk about or list on my boxing list that is just a phenomenal. You know, one of the top best Mexican fighters to ever lace gloves. Real true warrior. So when I got the call, initially I was like, hell yeah, of course. Of course I want to go out there and I want to meet him. So I picked up my camera and I drove out there and I had a chance to have lunch with him and sat there. And, you know, and I put this out on Twitter. I said, the one thing that I noticed about Bobby Chicón, okay, and here's a guy. Let me tell you this. If you're a newbie fan of boxing and you've only had the chance to see the Mayweathers of the world and the Danny Garcias of the world and the Triple G's of the world and et cetera, Manny Pacquiao's of the world, and didn't have a chance to really watch the 70s and the 80s, those fighters, the fighters that I grew up with, the fighters that I just, you know, what drew me into the sport, you really missed out on a great era. And Bobby Chicón was one of those guys that helped produce a lot of richness in the sport of boxing at that time, you know. And at the same time, his life was very turmoil. He had a lot of things going on outside of the ring. And Mike Rodriguez, the cut man for War Tape, you know, that also works with War Tape, put on his Facebook, and it was perfect in what he said, in the sense that even though this guy's life was always like a roller coaster, and everything that he had been through, I'm talking about even in his prime, okay, he never allowed anything to break him. You know, he stood his ground, and he's by far, you would have to say, is the perfect example of when Rocky Balboa is having that speech with his son. It's not about how hard you get hit. It's how you get back up and keep punching back at life. And Bobby Chicón was that example, that prime example. He really never let life just keep him down. He knew how to get back up. He had the heart of a lion. Even lions would be like, damn, this guy just doesn't give up. And so that is just kind of in a nutshell, who Bobby Chicón was, okay? His wife had at the time, in his prime, had committed suicide. And it didn't stop him when everybody at the time was telling him that, you know, he was past his prime. And he still went out there and he performed and he won. And it was a you know, fight of the year and, you know, and so on. And it never stopped there. And he always produced what he could in that ring. There was never a dull moment when he stepped into that ring. So when I had the chance to go out to Fresno, California to meet him, you know, of course, you know, I was like a little kid in a candy store, you know. To me, this was, you know, being a Mexican-American, we didn't have a lot of idols. You know, I mean, growing up in the 70s and stuff, we didn't have these role models that we could look up to. So seeing a guy that looked like me, the guy that came from my background, that was a big thing for me. That was something that was special. So you imagine when I went out there to go meet up with him, I was so excited. And when I got there, I still was very excited to meet him. And right away, Bobby Chacon showed that he loved being the schoolboy. He loved the fact that people embraced him because he had created so much happiness for so many other people when we watched him fight. And this guy, you couldn't even tell there was a wear and tear from him, from inside the ring and from what life has done to him outside the ring. You couldn't even see it because he was too busy walking around, hugging people, giving them kisses on the cheek, you know, throwing his hands. He would throw flurries of punches. You know, he stepped into the ring and he would throw another flurry of punches and stuff. So this guy just had so much life in him. And if you didn't have a chance, you know, if you were from Northern California, Southern California, or anywhere around the world, you didn't have a chance to meet him, I tell you, man, that the excitement will overwhelm you, but at the same time, the sadness of knowing what that man's been through in his life and seeing what the life has done to him, which was like, you know, Bobby, like most fighters that were, you know, that allow the ring to consume them, don't always come back out in one piece. And Bobby wasn't in one piece, you know. His soul is what was one piece, but everything else wasn't in one piece. You know, his speech impediment was really bad. You could understand him, you know, but others that didn't know about him. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because I did like, I think like 2 hours of filming of him. And I had a chance to sit and talk to him about his career and what it meant to be the schoolboy, what it really meant for all these years of giving us terrific fights, you know, what was the takeaway from it, right? And the excitement automatically, you know, turned into a very sad moment for me, not for him, but for me, to see one of the greats and one of the fighters that I've witnessed and that drew me into this sport fumble with words and knew exactly what he wanted to say. In his eyes, you could see exactly where he was coming across and you could read from that. You know, but seeing that life and the ring had just beat him. But at the same time, he just didn't allow that to take over. You know, he would still jump up and give you a hug and give you a kiss. I think if somebody would pick up an article and read about Bobby Chacon's life, don't even watch his fights. But just read about his life, what the man's been through. There was an appreciation that you can have, you can see, you know, that you can give him. And that was certainly something that I was able to give him and able to see him, because I don't know many people that would be able to walk straight knowing what he's been through in his life, you know, being a fighter, losing his wife, losing his money. I put this out there in Twitter. I said, you know, the fans, boxing fans, we really get the reward from the sport. It's the fighters that really don't. And if you really look at, after everything is said and done, after their career is over, a lot of them, once they step out of that limelight, it's total darkness. You know, a lot of them don't have a second career. A lot of them don't have a trade. A lot of them didn't really focus on what is next. What's plan B? Because, you know, for the moment, you just think about plan A. And to get to that plan, you know, to get on the top of that hill and jump up and down and say, I made it. None of them realize that after you do that hike, that long, hard hike up to the top of that hill, that you got to come back down. And when you come back down, not necessarily, not none of them don't, they really don't know what is waiting for them. And I've watched a lot of my childhood heroes, fighters, because really that's all I ever watched as a kid, have nothing, man. Nothing but emptiness at that bottom of that hill, you know? And not saying that Bobby didn't, because he had people that loved him. He got remarried. His wife, you could see his wife truly loved him. He had a lot of great friends that were around him, people that took care of him, that were there with him. And you know, when I had that chance to meet him, that was the one thing that I noticed, that he was surrounded with people that truly, truly loved him and cared, really cared. You know, not talking about the promoters, not talking about the management, but I'm talking about people that went through the thick and thin with him, or even had a chance to meet him in that point of his life when I met him, and had this great understanding that this was, you know, this was a guy that just wouldn't let nothing, not one thing, get in his way of happiness, of expressing how happy he was. And I saw that. I don't know how it was behind the closed doors, but I tell you, when I saw him, man, I was like, this man is blessed. He truly loves to be Bobby the Schoolboy Chicón. And it really kind of resets you. It kind of takes you back, because you sit there and you think about your life. And until you read about what this man, what has happened in this man in his career, what he had to go through to prove himself from the beginning to the middle to the end of his career, you, trust me, you're just going to have this new respect, you know. And I've interviewed a lot of our legends. I've interviewed a lot. Johnny Tapia, you know, Smoking Joe Frazier, you know, Hector Camacho Sr. Interviewed a lot of them. And there's still a lot of our legends out there still today. Frankie Randall's another one right now, you know, who's struggling, who's another, you know, great champ that's left in the dark. Anyways, Fight Fans, you want to call in, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. Let's talk boxing here. I gave you a little bit of my memory about Bobby Chicón and stuff. And, you know, I thought it was, you know, like I said, what I walked away with Bobby Chicón was, there was obviously some sadness there, but there was just so much excitement with him that even though whatever physical that was going on with him, the man just absorbed the fact that he was Bobby Chicón. Going up, I thought it was just great watching him throwing a flurry of punches in the ring, and people out in the amateur, it was an amateur bout, you know, a function. People were cheering, going to the parking lot and seeing this guy just interact with the kids that were lacing gloves, you know, because at one time he was in that position. I thought that was just phenomenal. Thought it was great. You know, and like I said, you know, growing up, you know, kid from the 70s and 80s and stuff, you know, we didn't, as Mexicans, you know, as a Mexican kid, a Mexican-American kid, we didn't have these, you know, real big role models. Once we saw one, I think anybody that was Chicano can relate to this. Once we saw that one, once we found out, yo, that's one of us, we really hung on to that, really, you know, held that. You know, and this is a fighter that I kind of pass on for my children to watch and kind of show them, look, this is one of the fighters that represented us. This is one of us. Anyways, Fight Fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Hopefully Gabriel will be coming on. Let me pass on to Fight Fan really quick before I go in about some fight news here on Leaving the Ring, and then we're going to go into our predictions and stuff. Area code 530, you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother?
Hey, Dave, good evening. It's Ringside Robert.
Hey, what's going on, Ringside Robert? How you doing, brother?
I'm doing fine. I grew up in Northern California, and I remember Bobby Chicón really well. I tuned in after the show started, so I take it you got a chance to meet him?
Yeah, I did. I had a chance to go down to Fresno, California, because I'm from the North Bay. I'm originally from San Jose, California. You know,
okay.
So, you know, I had a chance to you know, when I was invited, I was asked from a cut man, a friend of mine, a candy man, to come out and meet, because I had told him, you know, when we talk about historical fights and fighters from the, you know, 70s or 60s, 70s and 80s, you know, I was one to always talk about those type of guys. And if I had to make a measurement of fighters today, I would use that stick of the fighters that we watched in the past, right? So
right.
Candy man, you know, he knew that. He knew that, you know, Bobby was one of my favorites, you know. It was one of the guys that I always go back and tune in and watch and stuff, and you know, And so he was like, hey, you know, Bobby's a really good friend of mine, and we're taking him to an amateur event here in Fresno, California. I know that's in your neck of the woods. Would you be willing to come down and interview him? You know, and that's what I was saying, Rob. I went out there in full intentions of, you know, filming and interviewing him and posting it on YouTube. But after everything was said and done, and here's the thing, because I've talked about this in the past, and people are like, hey, have you ever going to release, like, certain footages I've made? And I've made this the moral decision of not releasing certain things. And Bobby Chacon's interview was one of them. And the reason why I didn't, Bobby, is because the handicap that he had of his speech, I didn't want people to make fun of a person I looked up to.
No, well, Dave, I'm very familiar with his story, and I think
right.
You made the wise decision, because you know, being disabled myself, I can identify with, you know, what he goes through. But you know, I started watching boxing in the early '70s, and of course, I grew up around here, and I watched all of his fights. I've seen every single one of his fights they ever shown on TV. I mean, that's one guy that, if you grew up in California, you know, you grew up knowing that every time you see this man in the ring, he gave it everything he had. And it's a sad ending, which it most of the time is for fighters, because people around them, let's face it, people around them, they like to rip them off. And
right.
So when their career is over, they have nothing left. But it's nice to know that he's got people around him, and he's able to still enjoy life. I really appreciated your story, because I grew up and I watched almost every single one of his fights.
Yeah. Yeah, same here, man. And, you know, sad day. Like I said, it was the first thing in the morning. I think we have Gabriel with us right now. It was first thing in the morning. It was like 8, no, not even 8 o'clock. I think it was like 7 something. And Felipe Lignon, who's the host for In the Square Circle and the two-minute round, he gave me a call, and he was like, hey, did you hear the news? And I was like, what news? And he said, you know, and at the time, he was like, it's not confirmed yet, but I'm pretty sure, because it's a really good friend that has, you know, kind of let this out about, you know, Bobby, but really was choked up and couldn't get further on about the details, you know? And so I waited before I, you know, posted anything out there, you know, and as soon as I saw it on his website, on his Facebook, the guy that he was talking about, that's when I tweeted out, hey, rest in peace, man. And, you know, I'm happy, man. You know, here's the thing. Like I mentioned, I've interviewed a lot of our legendary fighters and a lot of them are in trainers and cutmans, and they have passed on. And even though they have passed on, I'm really grateful and thankful that they were at least generous to allow me to be around them, to even get a glimpse of the genius that they did have. Because, you know, I know a lot of people that don't follow boxing. They think it's just two guys in there throwing their hands and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there's always a glimpse of brilliance from these guys. Well, and Bobby Chacon showed that in a lot of his fights.
Well, back in the 80s and 90s, remember when the original Arco Arena was built, he used to fill the place up every time he fought.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, the guy knew how to bring out a crowd. And I think this is awesome that you have chosen to honor him, because for those that, you know, didn't grow up and see him fight, I highly suggest you go to YouTube, you watch his fights, and you definitely read up on his story, because I talk about things like this a lot when I do my various shows, Dave. And that's why on some of my shows I talk about guys when they reach a certain age, you know, people need to start watching out for them. Like a few weeks ago, Roy Jones was in the ring.
Right.
And, you know, of course, Paulie Malignaggi's been in the ring. And anytime anybody reaches a certain age, I start worrying about them, because I've seen the after effects of what happens when you've been in the ring for too long.
Yeah.
And
you just can't help, you know, when you see these fighters fall apart, you can't help to feel that you're falling apart with them. You know,
exactly.
I mean, you watch them from the beginning, you know, you're there when they're in their victories, you're there in their lows, you know, and then when they're in their really low, you know, especially for guys like us, you know, I get some people that, they watch the sport, but this, but that's what it is. It's a sport to them. You know, it's something that is to pass the time, you know. And I'm pretty sure you're exactly like this, Robbie. This is not a pass the time for guys like us. This
absolutely
is part of our
not.
Lifestyle, you
yeah.
know?
I mean, it's part of who we are. Like for example, on Saturday, I'm going to go out of my way and watch Brooke and Golovkin. And then Saturday night, I'm going to go out of my way and watch Chocolatito, even though they're going to replay the Golovkin fight. You know what?
Right.
So what? I get to see the Golovkin fight twice. No big deal. when there's boxing on TV, I watch
it. Won't take long.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Gabriel, I know it won't take long. I expect it to end real early. If you want my
yeah.
honest opinion, you know, I know you guys are probably going to talk about that later, but you know, that's my opinion. It's not going to take very long at all. But
no,
and I don't want to get off the subject here, but great thing that you did here, Dave. And if you want, I'll come back on later
Go ahead. Tell us what's on your mind. Go for it, brother.
Oh, okay. Well, I totally agree with Gabriel. I think Golovkin is going to end it within six rounds, maybe less. And I'm looking forward to the Chocolatito fight because, from what I'm hearing, I don't know much about this division. I'm learning like the rest of us. But from what I hear, this opponent is supposed to be the real deal. So maybe we can see. How good Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez really is, and what can you say about the opening act in L.A.? It might go down as fight of the year because they already fought in April and put on a hell of a show.
Yeah, it's going to be a show, man. I think the real, you know, meat and potatoes of the evening is, I think, you know, Kamagai and JSK 2 is a nice appetizer. We know what we're going to get. It's a little brutal, especially when we're talking about Bobby Chacon.
Yeah.
You know, my memory of him, and, you know, because, I mean, JSK's looked done for a while, but the thing is that Kamagai is also kind of sharp one, so together they make a great party. But, you know, I remember, I forget which fight it was. Maybe it was down in Ontario for that Chris Areola-Tomas Adamek fight. But somebody introduced me to Bobby, and I couldn't understand anything he was saying. He was smiling, really happy. But he talked to me for a while, and I grew up watching him. But it was just heartbreaking because he clearly was saying something, and I just couldn't understand him. He was just that's what the game took from him. And fighting on too long and just the wars, probably, you know, all kinds of things. Who knows? And but then they brought him into the ring. And, you know, he had that kind of shuffle that the boxers get after they begin to lose their motor skills and their reflexes and everything. But he got in that ring, and you could just see him light up. He didn't become, you know, in his prime again, but he threw some punches, and he smiled, and the crowd roared for him. And it was just something to see him get a little bit of that spotlight again. And how much they must miss it when it's gone, and that's why they stick around. And you know, I hate to be the dark cloud, but it's what sickens me about this game is that the people that are supposed to be in charge of making sure that these guys don't go on too long, and that they make sure that they pass the right tests and they take the right tests so that they don't do that, and they still don't do that.
You know, Gabriel, I came up with a few weeks ago because a lot of times when I do my various shows, we'll joke around on subjects. And, you know, I came up with a thing. Boxers need, like, a rehab center because, I mean, drug addicts have rehab, alcoholics have rehab. Well, boxers get addicted to what they do, and they don't know how to handle life outside the ring, and in a lot of cases they do it for too long. You know, people in this sport need to think about the people who are in this sport and what happens to them afterwards.
Yeah,
you know, it's I don't purport to be an expert on this subject, which is. A few different people are writing about it. Hauser's writing about it. And certainly he's, you know, an intelligent man and a great writer. But this million-dollar insurance thing, I
was going to mention that, right.
Guys, and I don't want to just, you know, talk out of school. But the basic idea that we can't afford to insure these guys, and it's going to kill our business. And no, we're not making millions off the club shows. I get that. That there's the minors and then there's the majors, you know, there's the mid-majors. And it's a losing proposition until you get a guy like a Golovkin or a Canelo. But, you know, we just keep looking at how fractured the sport is and how not protected these guys are. I see more guys arguing for guys to get paid less. They get annoyed that the fighters want to make more and want some soft touches. You know, I just – it just sickens me. It's like, well, what are these people's lives worth to you? Your memories? Some pictures you may take with them? Maybe, you know, I'm Ellie Sekback, and I did a video interview with everybody under the sun of no substance. But who's fighting for these guys?
Right.
Who's worrying about them? I mean, you could say Al Haymon screwed up the game, but he's getting these guys paid what their lives are worth. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, they may not still,
yeah.
they may not
it's
make the
point.
Ratings or, you know, fill up the stadiums. You can argue about the way he builds guys. But, you know, at least the NFL players make – money that is comparable to what they give up. Boxers do not. And it angers me watching people that can sit comfortably through generations of guys behind a laptop, whether you're media or just a fan, and dictate,
you know,
what these guys' lives are worth.
You know, the only thing that bothers me, you guys, is about this million-dollar insurance thing is this, okay? Is it a very high price for a promoter to dish out? I mean, of course, you know, but here's the problem is that you knew that you could have solved this problem, that if you would have came up with some idea in the first place, instead of allowing
right.
the New York Commission to do it, you know, because some of the complaints that I'm hearing from New York correspondents is that, well, the New York Commission, there's nobody in there making decisions that are, they're boxing people. Well, the doors were wide open. Why didn't you not walk through them? How are you going to complain about it now? You know, when
right.
you didn't want to step up to the plate.
Well, and there was a, you know, wasn't there a Boxing Promoters Association? And you see
yeah,
some
what
of
happened
those
to
guys
that?
Complaining about
right.
this. I mean, yeah, you guys didn't even update your website, much less come up with any cohesive plan, anything to help the fighters. These guys... I'm so tired of hearing these guys risk their lives for you. On one hand, when we complain about an Al Haymon soft touch or an Al Haymon fighter making too much money. But then on the flip side, we don't want to insure these guys for $1 million if something happens to them. What the fuck is that?
Hmm.
You know, I mean, are you in the business of peddling fighter flesh? You are. So
well,
maybe
you know,
should take some responsibility for it.
It's 2016, right. it's 2016, guys. It's time to wake up and get out of the closet because
right.
a case like Bobby Chacon should bring it home to everybody. I mean, look at Muhammad Ali. He suffered with what he suffered with for 32 years because he fought for too long. And
right.
How many living legends or fighters we love and care about, how many have to die before somebody finally steps up and says enough's enough? I mean, I know we have unions in football and baseball and basketball
right.
and hockey. Maybe it's time to put together a boxing union, you know?
Well, there's a gentleman that, you know, I've been deep in rehearsal, so I'm kind of in a cultural black hole right now, like working, you know, like 8 to 6, basically. I'm just like not really. You'll see me tweet now and again. That's me on a break. And so but I've been wanting, Dave and I have talked about this. There's a group of gentlemen representing different fighter associations, proposed unions that I'd love to have on. We'll probably have them on here in the next week or so, next episode or so, and really educate us and talk to us about it. Because you're absolutely right, Robbie. The time has come. Boxing is so full of hypocrisy. On one hand, we celebrate these guys and we lament what happened to Muhammad Ali. But then when there's time to actually do something, it's funny. Like, you'll see people use the phrase, you know, hashtag activism. But aren't these guys doing the same thing? you talk about how great he is and, oh, what a tragedy it was, and, oh, Roy Jones is fighting on too long. But when it's time to actually build something and do something, like I did up in Canada with the anti-doping program, I got criticized for that instead of trying to be praised for, or just even acknowledged for trying to help move the sport freaking forward. It just makes me angry. And you don't, you know, you have Mike Coppinger talking about his platform all the time. What have you done? What are you doing? Is the sport going to be better for you having been in it? I can honestly say the sport is better for me having been in it. I know very few people in the sport that can say that. It's time to protect the fighters.
Yeah, so, it really is. It is, really, you know.
Yeah.
All right, Rob, you got anything else, brother, you want to bring up?
That's my soapbox.
I don't want to set Gabriel off, but did you read the story? Did you read the story today, Gabriel, about Felix Sturm?
I did not. I did not.
Apparently there's a doping charge against him, and he got upset about it, he moved to Bosnia so he could avoid the charges.
Oh, no.
Well,
it was in today's Associated Press, if you guys want to look it up.
I will check
that out, Robbie. Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't really make any calls or check my texts till about 6 p.m. and then, kind of dive back into the world. I'm heavy in this play right now. So
I haven't even checked in any news other than what's going on with Bobby. But thanks, Robbie. That's some good information there. I got to check that out. I got to read that.
Yeah, no, you'll if you go to, I don't know if the AP has a website, but if you go there, they posted it sometime this morning. I read it this morning when I read the newspaper. So, because the service I use, they have the RSSN feed, so whenever there's breaking news, it pops up. So it was there early this morning, and since you guys haven't followed the news. The Tyson Fury Klitschko fight is back on for the 29th of October.
Yeah, I saw that.
Postponed again, and
So
I see it. It's weird. People don't want to see that. I thought the first fight was really compelling, and I'd like to see it again. Color me a Rigondeaux fan, I guess. But I don't mind a tense strategic battle, particularly between two guys who could probably end it in one punch if things go wrong, more Klitschko than Fury. I think it's a really compelling fight, and it's always nice to see the passing of the torch and to see a champion actually step up, Pacquiao, Crawford, to do that. Floyd Mayweather advanced anybody of note in the end of his career. I like it when a guy says, you know what, I'm a lion in winter. Let's see if I can bring one more storm. And, maybe Klitschko can. Maybe this delay will be good for him.
Yeah, well, we'll find out in October, guys, but I don't want to take over your whole show because I can talk just like the two of you, so I'll let you move on. I'll let you move on to somebody else if you want. Anyway,
hey,
good
thanks,
show,
Robbie.
Guys. And,
hey,
and
thank
thanks,
you, man.
Dave, for, thanks, Dave, what you're doing for Bobby. That's awesome.
Hey, thank you, brother. Appreciate it, man. Wow.
Dave, can you tell me rookie some intense scenes today? I'm all fired up.
Right. Well, Tyson Fury is not the only one that's in the news right now. His nephew?
Huey?
What is it, Huey? Yeah, Huey Fury. He's going to be facing Andy Ruiz for an elimination bout. That's not that bad.
That's a really good fight, actually. I don't know who wins that. I kind of like Huey.
I think they're both, Huey, I think they're both on the same level playing field, so I think it's gonna work
for both of them, probably more for Andy.
I was gonna say that more for Andy because we haven't seen enough of Andy. I mean, what we've seen of Andy is to me, it's not enough to say this guy's got the potential goods. I mean,
yeah, it's hard to,
here's the thing
is
with Andy,
is he real or is Butterbean?
Right. Well, yeah, he boxes far more better than Butterbean. But I know what you're talking about, Is it a gimmick, I don't anticipate that he's a gimmick. I think he's got the goods, but I just wonder, is the size going to be a factor, you know, because he's not that. If your complaint was about Chris Oriola, body, you know, body frame and everything else, yours is going to be big time with Andy Ruiz.
Yeah, I mean, that's always driven me crazy too, is that people in boxing have a hard time seeing things as they are. You know, like Chris Oriola, like it's sort of like with the loop they're stuck in with Canelo and Triple G. They can't leave it alone. Triple G can't even leave it alone, which leads me to believe that, you know, he's a bit of a bullshitter in regards to what that fight was about for him. Because Canelo has yet to prove he's actually a legit middleweight, you know, and but people keep hammering that fight because, like, they just get caught in a loop. And, like, Oriola, you know, hopefully they don't do this with Andy. He was never going to be a bodybuilder, and if there was always, like, let's focus on his weight because I'm not smart enough to think of a new angle about Chris. You know,
right.
Let's focus on that. What's he
look
like?
Not,
oh, he's
let's not
skinny.
Focus. Yeah, let's pass the fact that, you know, even though his body looked the way it did, he never gassed out. He threw tons of combinations, more than any other heavyweight at the time. But let's just focus on that weight because, you know, we just, God forbid, we have a heavyweight that wins a championship and looks just like him. You know, when we talk about racism in the sport, there's a reverse racism in terms of certain guys have to have a certain look in a certain division. There's a truth to the matter.
Yeah, my brother would tell me this early on. It's boxing, not bodybuilding. You know, so like, don't be. And he's one that really, he was a huge fan. My brother Tom would really show me a lot about the sport, and he would talk about that. Like, you know, sometimes a guy just looks super ripped, and Bruce Seldon looked like he should never lose. Frank Bruno too.
Right.
But
right.
You know, it's boxing, not bodybuilding. And Chris, you know. Chris's problem was upstairs more than his gut. You know, I remember doing an interview with him on like a conference call and basically just called him out on it and said, you have a fear of success. You want to not do well in camp. That way you can say, well, that way you don't find out if I train to 100% and lose, you won't find out if you're, you know, weren't good enough or not.
Well,
you know?
Remember when we went down to, Yeah. Do you remember when we went down to Two Feathers boxing club? And you remember when I can't remember what interview, because we've interviewed him a few times, but remember that one time I told him, you're very self-destructive. And he just kind of went into that. Remember that? He just started saying, yeah, I am. You know, I am very self-destructive. And he just started talking about how it's just not about the sport, it's in life and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the gathering of his bearings finally was at the end of his career, but it was a little too late. You
yeah,
know?
I mean, it's always that. If you don't have, you know, I think he's an intelligent guy, actually. People would disagree based on the language he uses or whatever. But I think that was always Chris's problem, was he was kind of too smart, but it wasn't fully formed. And so he was self-aware. But he didn't roll it towards the positive. Instead, he would kind of get to the precipice and then just blow it up. I mean, how do you disappear for like 3 weeks in the middle of training camp, you know, for a world title fight? You know, I mean, that's insane. But it's, you know, that shit like that goes down with people. It's just, he made the wrong choices. And later in the career, you could see him in better shape and going about fights smarter. But just the body wasn't there anymore. It's
no.
The Tyson says that, you know, it's like, you know, why is too late?
Yeah, yeah. You know, when you finally are, you get your 2 feet on the ground and you say, hey, this is a lot more comfortable. Let me try walking with both my feet rather than skipping through life. It could sometimes be too late. Definitely be way too late. But fans, you want to call in, certainly can, 347-215-7598. Gave my remembrance of Bobby Chacon, and, you know, like I said, I had the great pleasure of meeting him, and you know, it's something that I'm always going to cherish in my life, you know, meeting Bobby Chacon and the great career that he left behind, the legacy that he left behind and stuff. And, you know, Rob Riddler, who's still – is kind of active with Instagram and all that. He left something that was pretty really interesting on my Instagram. He had said, hopefully the fighters today get a chance to watch his career and it gives him motivation, you know, in terms of fighting the best. Because that's one thing that Bobby didn't do. He didn't avoid, you know. Look, if you know what's crazy, because I was making the reference with Rocky Balboa, I believe it was, what, 5, when he has that conversation outside of his restaurant with his son. You remember that, Gabriel? And he's like, you know, it's not how hard you get hit. It's how, you know, you keep getting up and et cetera, right? But there's another scene in Rocky, what was it, Rocky 4, right? That was, Rocky 4 with when he's about to face Drago, remember? And his wife is standing at the stairs, and she's like, you know, you can't win. And she was really clearly petrified about him stepping in with Drago. Well, Chacon was in that same kind of boat when his wife was asking him not to go step in the ring with Edwards, I believe. You know? And there was a lot of people that were telling Bobby not to do it. Now, granted, his wife at that time, you know, who committed suicide, you know, she had an illness, you know, and so that was kind of in the effect of her, you know, going along and committing suicide, and her having this great fear of Bobby going back into the ring, you know. But I mean, he was at that point. He was told, and I had a chance to talk to him about that, you know, and he said everybody was telling him not to step into that ring, to avoid that. And he turned out to be very victorious in it. It was the fight of the year. And he proved a lot of people wrong. I mean, this is a guy that based his life on proving folks wrong when he was told you can't do it. And Gabriel's over there wrestling with the phone in the background.
Sorry,
I think he's trying to hold it down.
it was a motorcycle. I'm actually also in the middle of the ending of my fantasy football draft. So you want to, you're like, when are you going to call? I'm like, oh God, I need a quarterback.
Yeah.
It's been, it's weird, man. I went from really working freelance and then doing a play like at a different time. Like, you know, sometimes if you're producing yourself, it can be rehearsing at night. This is a whole different animal. 6 days a week, I get one day off on Mondays. And it's really like try to catch up with all the things that you didn't do all during the week, and then you go all again. So, but it's awesome, dude. You're gonna hopefully you'll come out and see this one. It's a 14-person epic play, 5 acts, 2 hours. Giant,
right on.
Giant play. Yeah. So, all right, I've landed to the spot where I can sit. it's just crazy. It's like the good old days in LA, and then we do these traveling. When I was on the way to the Fight Night Club, remember?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Let's get down to the business. Let's talk this fight, man.
Yeah, let's talk about this fight. Let's. Which one do you want to talk first? You want to talk through one, or you want to talk about the one that by far I think is going to steal the show?
I think that was a motorcycle rolling up, by the way. Let's talk Triple G Brooke.
Triple G Brooke.
I think it's going to be – I got Triple G in 4-6. I just – Brooke is sounding like a guy that doesn't know anything about the weight. He just knows how strong he feels at this weight. But he hasn't been punched by anybody like Triple G. Even as a welterweight, he hasn't been punched like somebody – you know, who did he really face that was a scary power puncher and also technically skilled like Triple G in his entire career? I can't think of anybody. So now he's jumped 2 weight classes. Says he feels like a monster, super ripped. He's actually weighs more than Triple G, so he hasn't even perfected how to make 160. He's dropped, 15 pounds in the last 30 days? I don't know if that's necessarily the greatest idea for your first time. So I'm curious to see what he blows back up to on fight night. But he'll be fighting for the first time probably around 170 plus. Again, I don't think that's a great idea. And he's going to try to go in there and bang. I don't know if you watched any of the sparring footage of him.
Oh, I did.
But,
I did.
Dude, he's eating punches like I eat M&Ms on the regular. And that's just not going to be a good thing.
Yeah. You know, the obviously we're going to all point out the negatives of what I think that we're going to foresee on fight night. but I'll bring out some of the positives that to me he would have to draw up. But the negative is this, and you're absolutely right, man, about that weight. Okay, I think the approach is a lot. It's kind of misleading in how they're walking into this fight with Triple G, because that's not the first time I've heard some folks, friends of mine that I talk to on a basis of boxing, to other folks that email us on Leaving the Ring. Some folks have made the comparisons of, Pacquiao's jumped up, Roberto Duran, but I've always pointed out, yes, but before they made that big leap, they did flirt with some of the other smaller ponds before they got into that big lake. And that's the thing that I've always had concerns for a fighter that says, I can't make this weight, but I got to jump up. Now, listen, I get it. Everybody wants to say, dude, but he's shooting for greatness. But I just say, why, what is the rush to get to that top of the hill? I mean, if you know for a fact you can get there, Gabriel, let me put it this way. When I was growing up as a kid, my dad always used to say this, say, slow down, kid, walk up the hill, because if you run up there, if somebody pushes you off that hill, you're not going to know how to get back up there, because all you knew was the charge. Slow down. And I've always used that metaphor in life. And I sometimes wonder why fighters and even managers, management groups, they're such in a rush. And even the fans, we're such in a rush to see somebody just jump for that greatness that we've kind of forgot that there's a transition to become great. Some folks in this era of people now is everything is like fast and quick, just get there. Boom, boom. Who cares about putting in the work? Just get there. Now with Brooke, yeah, maybe he can't make that weight. But what I see, when you have extra pounds on you, which is muscle, and you and anybody that works out, and anybody that's ever worked out and try to put mass in their body, you're going to automatically feel that difference, right? Especially in combat, you're going to feel that difference in weight, not just on your shoulders, not just on your forearms, but on your legs. And the thing with Brooke at 147, he was never really that slick with his legs. If you go watch his last three fights, he would throw out a jab, and his jab wasn't the fastest one either, because you could counter that jab. We saw Porter do it. We saw what was the other kid that was from the UK that he fought? It was what was it? I just watched the damn fight. Anyways, we saw him, and he stopped him. I believe it was in the seventh or eighth round. But
are you talking about Bizier?
No. Oh God. It'll come to me, man. I have it right here in the tip of my tongue.
I'll pull up his record here, and I'll nail it for you. Go on your rant. I got you.
And the thing that I watch with Brooke is this, is that he's always had the size advantage to a point.
Yeah.
And he's always been able to use it, okay? Here's the first time ever he's going to get in the ring with a guy that is equally same size, even though some are saying he's bigger than Triple G at this moment. Gavin, there you go. And Gavin was able to land his, even though he's a southpaw, he was able to land his hook, and he was able to jab with him, and he was able to push him back. Go with Porter, the same thing. Okay, so that
Carson
tells
Jones.
Me, Carson Jones, great example. So that tells me that the only way I see Brooke having some major success is if he's learned how to be a little bit more light-footed, Gabriel. If he's learned how to jab going backwards and not forward, but allowing Triple G to do what Triple G does, which is come forward and get hit. But he's got to give Triple G so many different angles that it's going to confuse Triple G. Muscles, they're not going to win this fight. The biggest muscle you have is that brain. That's what's going to win this fight. So the cons for him is this weight issue, never testing the waters at that weight, he's never had his chin tested, and He allows people to get in his pocket. He's not selfish about his personal zone. You know what I mean? He's not uncomfortable with somebody stepping in his personal zone. He's fine with that. But the problem with him was once you get in that zone of, you know, his personal zone, I've never seen him. And please, somebody tweet me or call in and tell me if I'm wrong. But I've never seen him do some great inside work.
No, I don't. Yeah, I don't think of him as that guy. And I think in close. I mean, he's good at mid range. He's nice at long range. But you're right. He doesn't. It's like that piston jab that he's like, you know, make. He doesn't punish you for trying to come in. He will let you come in. I just think Triple G is going to shrink the ring and beat his ass.
Yeah, I think what Triple G is going to give us is something that a lot of us were thirsty for with him when facing Lemieux. In terms that here's a big name, and he didn't want to engage with Lemieux. He gave him a boxing lesson, but here's a much safer route because you're getting a guy that hasn't tested himself out, and we know that extra weight's going to slow him down. You know, the Triple G team, they're not stupid. They looked at this and they said when the opportunity arose, they jumped on it. They were like, hey, yeah, why not? Here's a name that can draw people. It gives us a chance to showcase our skills. It gives us a chance to give the world a big stage so we can entertain you. So why wouldn't we jump at that opportunity? You know, it gives you the prime example, like you mentioned earlier. It's like, okay, Triple G, for a long time, we had Abel Sanchez on the show. He said, we don't care who has the belt. We just want the belts. But now the tune has changed. Now they're still talking about Canelo. So things have changed. And I think rightfully the reason things have changed is because of age. They're looking at a guy that's what? He's what, 37 now? Or what?
34.
How old is he? He's 34, okay?
I believe he's 34,
Yeah, he's 34, 35, whatever. I think they're looking at age, and I think they're looking at realizing that, you know, they've only probably got maybe 3-4 years left, if that. It's kind of stretching it out, you know, because not everybody's a B-hop.
Right.
Not everybody can do that. But let's just say 3 years. They understand that those years are going to go fast, so now it's all about the money. Because 3 years ago on Leaving the Ring on 2013, Triple G had said on the show that after fighting Gabriel Rosado, that he wanted, if he couldn't get Sergio Martinez, he wanted Andre Ward. That tells me everything. It's, you know, here's the plan. The plan didn't, and I think in all honesty, brother, I think in all honesty, guys, I think the plan was originally, yes, get all the bouts. And there was going to be lucrative fights out there because he would be the Lanier champion and everybody would go come after him. But that didn't happen. So now the plan has changed. So now you got to keep the money cow name in your mouth to keep it lucrative, to make sure it's lucrative. And Kell Brook's name came along. Hey, there's a lucrative check there. And there's a strong possibility. I mean, not strong. There's the possibility is to still maintain I'm the fierce man at 160. So why wouldn't I take it? Great business move. Everybody said that. Every fight fan that doesn't even watch the sport of boxing has said great business move. So how does Brooke throw in a monkey wrench? That's what I'm going to ask you. How does he throw in a monkey wrench into this whole game plan of trying to keep himself as the most feared man at 160 so that he can wait for the ginger boy to jump up?
Well, that's the thing. You know, when they intimated – and I didn't really hear Triple G say, you know, I let Willie Monroe hit me and let the fight go a little longer to entertain the fans. I think a lot of people asked him that and put that on him. And he went with it.
Oh, absolutely.
I get the sense. I think personally it's going to be highlight reel KO in like 4. But I wouldn't be surprised if Triple G just takes his time, lets the dude kind of burn himself out at a new weight, moving around, trying to stick and move, and then, you know, just figures out what he can land and gets in there about 4 and you know, ramps it up in 3, knocks him out in 4.
I think that you know, for Brooke to be successful, he's going to have to stick and move all night long, never engage. And whatever he was, maybe that's the grand plan, is to say, I'm going to engage and I'm going to bang with him. And he's not really going to do that. He's just prepared.
I think he thinks
that
he wants.
Happens.
Right.
You know, but for them to jump all over Triple G at the top is a huge mistake. So I think he needs to spoil it and be that
you know
guy.
What?
Make Triple G follow him around.
I think what Kell Brook and them are doing is the weight gain, the muscle gain, is because they want to treat this fight as if they're in the welterweight fight, which is Kell Brook being the bigger guy, Kell Brook being able to use his weight advantage, Kell Brook using his size to push the smaller guy. I think they're looking at Triple G as a Porter, as a Carson Jones, as a Gavin. In so many different ways, but not being realistic that this is not, you know, Gennady's none of those dudes. He's going to go to the body. He knows how to work the inside. He knows how to cut off the ring. And if all other things fail, and if he feels that Brooke has power, he's going to revert to something that he brought to the table that surprised everybody, which is the jab, you know? And
yeah.
Either way, Brooke to me, going in there to, dude, a cub should have no way in hell should go in there and try to fight the lion. You know, the cub should learn first, watch what the lion does, so that when he does attack to try to take the throne, he'll know exactly what he's going to get himself into. Me right now, Brooke and his everybody else, which, hey, it's boxing. There could be a major, this would be the biggest upset if Kell Brook can change his stripes, go in there, and not, or let's just say, not even change. Let's say his game plan actually works. He is a harder puncher. He lands a big punch and drops Triple G the way Buster Douglas did to Mike Tyson. But the difference is Buster Douglas didn't just, you know, catch him with one big shot. He physically broke that man apart with boxing skills by staying cautious and touching the canvas at one time by Mike Tyson. I see Brooke getting caught in the second round after realizing, you know what, muscles are just a little, they're a good show, but it's the punches that really, really define the sport. He's going to get dropped, get back up, and I think he's going to revert to the game plan that we initially had thought you should do, which is stay away, or you shouldn't have even took the fight. Should have suffered the 147 or say I'd fight at 154. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, he must know something we don't know, you know, to take this fight. But, I mean, at the same time, I think a lot of people are and rightfully so, you know, when you see a guy risk to be great, it isn't, I wasn't crazy about this argument that this is not the same thing as the Amir Khan Canelo fight, you know, because – you know, Khan had been stopped twice. I'll agree with that. But to me, that argument was only brought up in order to frame this better. This fight, to me, still feels like a welterweight who's now, you know, moving to 54 but has never really been there, jumping up two weight classes and going against the toughest, best guy, the guy that everybody really wants to call pound for pound, but he doesn't have the resume to earn that distinction. And that's simply all it is. Hopefully it's a better fight. And I always love being proved wrong when it turns out to be a great fight. But, you know, and there's an instinct in me that's just kind of, the more people champion Triple G and make excuses for him and just suck him off in the media, the more I kind of don't like him, even though long before anybody was talking about him, when the next round was just a webcast on Max Boxing that you had to be a member to see, I was talking about Triple G being the next big thing. Now everybody and their brother acts like they've been there since the beginning. You know, and I'm happy for his success. I think he's quality. He fights the way I like to see a fighter fight. And he wants the fights and everything. But this fight is still, in my opinion, a big mismatch. It doesn't prove anything beating Kell Brook.
No. Like I said, it's just it's padding the wallet. It's putting more rolls into the bank. So
it's opening a new market.
It's opening a new market. It's You know, there's that old video game that used to be on Nintendo 64 and even a Nintendo. What was it? what was it? Conquer? Oh, God. They still have it. Now it's Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? When you build, you know, forts, and then the more you move and destroy other little places, you take over a territory. That's pretty much what Triple G is doing. You know, he's just taking territories and territories, you know?
That was a great move. I mean, it's a weird card that Eddie Hearn put on the table. Here, take one of my top fighters that I could actually do other things with, but we'll just roll the dice here, make some money. It's just weird.
I mean, Eddie Hearn, you have a chance here to build up a guy that most of us thought that he would probably be the king of the welterweight division in due time, right? But instead, I think it was the frustration in terms of him saying, "I can't make the weight. I can't make the weight." You know,
and he can't get a fight. You know, he couldn't get a fight.
Right.
Yeah.
The
Danny
similarities were there.
Hemming and hawing about Berto. You know.
Right.
I mean, how the hell? You know. So I get it. You know, and the guy didn't want to make the weight anymore. So you know, cool deal. But yeah, it's really hard for me to get excited about this fight.
I'm hoping that, like you said, I'm hoping that he comes out, surprises everybody instead of just going straight with, you know, to the rhino. He plays the Matador because, that's a hard way of finding out if your chin can really hold up since it hasn't been tested. Since you really don't know, especially with the biggest puncher out there at 160. You know, I certainly wouldn't want. I mean, he's a brave soul, very brave soul, but at the same time, costly. You know, because this could, you know, here's the thing too, guys, is that this, even though this is a big jump, and yes, very brave. I mean, even Amir Khan jumped up, brave, being really, really brave. This sport has no mercy. This could physically change Kell Brook forever. Could never be the same again by daring to be great. So the risk is far. It's a major gamble. Of course, the reward is going to be praises for a very long time, you know. And everything is really – the big loss would be on Triple G if he loses to a small guy that jumped up. But, God, what a gamble. You want to talk about Russian roulette? This is the ultimate Russian roulette, getting in there with the biggest, scariest, monstrous puncher at the 160 right now with Triple G. You know?
Yeah, it's a dangerous fight. It is potentially career altering, that's for sure.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's Triple G. He's Triple Jesus. So he can do whatever he wants to do, and everybody's going to worship at the altar, you know? I mean, it's a big event. That's what's weird to me. It's like, I've heard that too. Well, it's a big event, and that's good for boxing. I was like, well, Floyd Mayweather had a lot of big events. I don't necessarily, and Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather was a big event. I don't know if that necessarily moves the sport forward.
No.
But we'll see, you know?
Yeah, no. The you know, I've always said this, dude, you know, she could be beautiful on the outside, but if the inside is all crappy,
who cares?
What was the point? Yeah, you know, who gave a shit? But hey, let's move on to the next fight. Let's talk about the next fight here. You know,
Chocolatito and Carlos Cuadros.
Cuadros here, a big guy, big Mexican guy. Dude gives a lot of angles, knows how to go to the body. Is a buzzsaw. Size is his advantage. Gonzalez may be in for a long night and a possible first loss on his record against this guy. You know, I mean, Gonzalez is a sharpshooter. Sharpshooter, and you know what I've liked about him is he can adjust, and he knows how to adjust. And when he adjusts, he keeps it still in the form of boxing. He doesn't get overzealous. He doesn't get too wild. He stays composed. But we've seen him getting in some tough battles with smaller guys, really good smaller guys. You know, Cuadros is a different beast, in my opinion. Not if they were the same size, I wouldn't have that big. I wouldn't see. I'd be like, okay, Ramon Gonzalez is going to figure him out. Give him some rounds, and it's going to go back and forth. But eventually, his power and his sharp shooting is going to take over. The sniper is going to zone in, and it's going to take over, right? But this is a bigger guy, you know? And what's up with the freaking pimples? Why is nobody talking about that? You know, that's a little funky there, man.
Well, why hasn't anybody actually clarified? And I have been keeping tabs on this. Why hasn't anybody figured out what's going on with the drug testing for Canelo and Liam Smith? You know, it's the same reason nobody cared before it came along and started like really writing detailed, super long pieces that talked about process and why this decision was made and all the different things that put pressure on people and got, a lot of heat for it. It's just no interest in it. Actually, a lot of guys with a lot of opinions and videos of their opinions and endless shows, on YouTube about their opinions. I don't see, and I've been in this period of rehearsals, as I said earlier on, but there's certain stories I do keep track of, and I keep saying it, and no one really responds with any sort of anything in depth. I mean, I don't trust Boxing Scene as a news entity. I've caught them in too many mistakes and caught them not checking their sources too many times. The practice of, if you're talking about a fight and, say Canelo is talking about Liam Smith and you only get him, that's a story. That's fine. But when you're talking about drug testing and the only person you get is Eric Gomez, who was named, president of Golden Boy today, and he just says there's no story there and no big deal. And then later on tells another writer a different version of how that went down and that Canelo is doing VADA. And VADA says on Twitter, he's not doing VADA.
Yep. No, he's not.
That is a story in and of itself. And then the whole thing demands that someone get to the bottom of it. And no one has. So to answer your question, pimples on the guy's back. There's
neck.
No money in it. No one cares, and no one's paying attention. Everybody just wants to be the next big thing on YouTube. Nobody actually wants to do the job and be a journalist and be unpopular. Our job is not to be friendly with these guys. It's to cover the sport and to speak truth to power and to make stories that are important, interesting. Nothing more. And I think everybody's really lost their way for the most part in that sport.
I think this, even fans too didn't catch on to it, because I had a few people like, damn, I didn't even really notice that, because I think our focus has been on Gonzalez, I didn't catch it. Honestly, didn't catch it till I was watching one of his fights and I was like, wait a minute. Then I saw one of his interviews on Fight Hub and I was like, dude, look at his neck. Like, what the hell? Then I went back and started looking at other things. And I'm like, wow, and he's a big boy for that weight
and
division.
It's all on the back, right? It's all on the back
and
neck. It's not in the front.
The back
it's
neck.
Not on his face.
Not
it's
on
all
his
on
face.
The back and neck. And,
right. Now, I'm not, listen, we're not accusing them of anything, but it certainly is a red flag when we've seen this in the past. So,
well, and Victor was on the show and Victor was on TNR like a few weeks ago, and we talked about that. It's like, the signs don't lie. The body gives off signs of use. You can see it. That's the real eye test. It's things like that. And when a guy like that is saying, and he wasn't talking about Cuadros, he was talking about somebody else, but he was talking about guys that worked with Memo Heredia that suddenly developed acne. And you go, hey, a guy like that, that is a pioneer in that field, points it out. I mean, you got to do something. But, nobody wants to ask questions. They don't want to be ostracized. It's, you want to be in the club and go to the BWAA dinner and maybe win an award. And when that and $5 will get you a cup of coffee at Starbucks. It's ridiculous. I watch that media and it's just, it's pathetic. By and large, it's pathetic. There are some exceptions, but I feel like I've come full circle in that I started as a writer because I didn't see the stories that I wanted to see written about. And so I went out and did that. And now that I'm not writing anymore, I'm not seeing those stories. You know, I want to know, why did that drug testing stop all of a sudden? What drug testing are they actually doing? And why did Eric Gomez's story change? That's important.
True. Very,
but, you know,
yep, very,
but back,
very important.
Back to the fight. I'm not picking Cuadras, but, man, the upset special looks real good. He's got a real difficult style, moves in and out, knows how to use his length. He's got a 2-inch reach advantage. He's got a height advantage. He's the dangerous guy in the fight. And you know, I don't know what Ramon Gonzalez is going to do with a guy like this, you know, with this size and this style. He's a special
guy.
I've
seen it all.
You know,
he's seen it all, though. I mean, Ramon Gonzalez, he's seen it all. Like I said, I don't think this is going to be – this is another day in the office, okay? But even sometimes you could drop – you could spill a cup of coffee on your suit, right? And this could be obviously the really hot coffee that's going to spill on the suit. So, Cuadros, I'm – you know what? I know everybody's picking – Ramon Gonzalez, but dude, going back and watching Cuadros and watching that style and seeing that when he gets in that pocket, and as soon as he gets into that zone, there is no turning off that light switch. And it's not like he comes directly at you. He gets in that pocket, and man, he uses the four corners. He's from the left to middle to right behind you. I mean, he really makes sure he's peppering not just your solar plex, but your ribs and your chest and your arms. I just wonder, because the fact that Ramon Gonzalez has had his, I wouldn't say his way with every fight. This is the guy's a pound for pound. I think the guy has this great genius of him because he's figured out guys. He's systematically has broken them apart. He's, you know, he uses every punch that comes textbook out of the sport. We haven't seen him do it with a bigger guy. So I'm picking Cuadros. I think Cuadros may have the recipe because of his size and because, like I said, his size and his mobility to get in the pocket and be a buzzsaw could definitely be a very big problem for Gonzalez. I picked the upset special. That's what I'm going for.
All right. Yeah, I mean, you know J.C. Estrada gave him trouble and was a bit of a, you know, a taller mover, boxer that could bang as well. That guy gave him trouble. That was a close decision. Some people think at a higher weight, that's a problem fight for Gonzalez. I don't want to copy you. I'm going to go with the chalk, but this might be one of those ones sort of like Finito Lopez at the end of his career where you're like, I don't know if he won this one, but, you know, they kind of gave it to him. I think it's going to be a razor-thin decision, but I think Gonzalez will pull it out, maybe late because of experience in this kind of fight. He pulls it out. I like the combination punching, and just he's just a beautiful boxer to watch. I think I like watching him even more than Triple G. His fluidity, the combinations, the footwork, the ability to switch gears, he's just got it all. I tell you what.
If Gonzalez's uppercuts, which we've seen him do, he's razor sharp with those uppercuts. He knows how to set them up. If he can get those working when those body shots are coming from Cuadros, that could be a big turnover. But if Cuadros can take those punches and eat them like we've seen him do with other fighters, that's why I say those body shots, we all know this, these body shots can just take the life out of you, okay?
Yeah.
So whatever Cuadros is going to be serving to Gonzalez, his appetite has to be all you can eat for this fight. And vice versa. It's vice versa, too, for Cuadros. His appetite has got to be extra to take whatever Gonzalez – he's facing one of the best fighters right now in the world, Cuadros. So, you know, this could be This could definitely be a Roberto Duran versus Sugar Ray Leonard in terms of Cuadros makes Gonzalez fight his fight, or he could he could thump around. He could thump around and follow and get frustrated and get caught with these razor-sharp combinations that Gonzalez does, and it'll be all Gonzalez. Because I only see it two ways, Gabriel. I see two ways. One big domination from Ramon Gonzalez, or an in-the-pocket, all-out war, which for me would sway much better for Cuadros type of fight.
I tend to think him making Gonzalez follow him around a little bit more might favor him, but just because I think I just wonder about Gonzalez moving up and then following around with the with the new legs. But maybe he's refreshed by it. Who knows? That's a tough one. But
I love this fight. Yeah, I mean, on paper it looks great. On paper,
yeah,
it just looks like wow. Okay, we have already a fight of the year candidate. This one could possibly steal that away. We won't know. We're gonna find out Saturday night. You know, Camila and Soto Carras. Hey, the only thing I like the fight. The first fight was great. The only thing is that sometimes the second fight we actually see who was supposed to be originally the guy that had no more left. That's what I'm worried about. It might be one guy that comes in there and just has no more left, and we have a dud.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I was watching, just jumping back really quick, I was watching Cuadros earlier, and I talked about it on Next Round last week. I thought, Cuadros has to fight aggressive and come forward and push Chocolatito around, and now I just think he's got to be himself, switch gears when he needs to and just move him around, use his length, make him pay, constantly make him pay for coming in on him. But yeah, JSK, I think whoever had the better camp, whoever's healthier on the night is the guy that wins it. I lean towards JSK in this one, but I think it's anybody's fight. It's going to be a hell of a night.
To me, this is just a much harder pick because I don't care who had the better camp. It's really health. Whose health is up to par for another all-out war, because, there's only so many times your body's going to, be receptive to something like that. There's got to be a breaking point. And a lot of times when we see guys that go in, with rare occasion we see the Arturo Gatti's and Ward fights, the rare occasion we see the Barreras and Morales all brutality, a lot of times we don't see that the second one around again to replicate what we witnessed the first time. So I'm curious.
Yeah,
could be an all-out war, or it could be a one-sided. Another guy has finally just rolled down the hill, and this is just the final touch, the cherry on top. So I'm hoping we have a great night of fights.
Yeah, me too. I gotta say, I always felt like after a few years, particularly when I got on the beat down in Los Angeles, I'd always put a clock of 10 years. I'd only be a reporter for 10 years. And if it didn't move to some level that I couldn't ignore, then I would just move back to theater, which is what I've done and really what I was always going to do. But I always said 10 years. But I have to say, if I could change eras that I was a writer, maybe I would have moved it to this one, and I would have much rather watched Triple G's career up close and Ramon Gonzalez, who's being moved into L.A. And I got to see a couple of his fights live down there. But, instead I got stuck with Floyd Mayweather. And that may seem strange to people who think he's TBE.
Right.
But, you've seen one Mayweather fight, you've been bored by them all. And particularly, in the era that I was at when he was at 47, unless he was fighting Marquez and that it was his mystery weight. But honestly, I would have much rather have spent 10 years covering Triple G and Chocolatito than Floyd Mayweather.
Right.
But just a sidebar.
There you go. There you go, folks, here on Leaving the Ring. I didn't watch the Mora and Jacobs press conference. Then again, I don't watch any of the press conferences. I have no interest for them and stuff, but that's happening. I see Danny Jacobs again. Danny Jacobs is going to be very dominant. I think he's going to finish what he started. Sergio Moro is going to be Sergio Moro. It's not going to be a fun-filled fight night, obviously. Is this going to be one of those, okay, let's get past this so that we can finally see Danny Jacobs step up and get the bigger and more lucrative, not lucrative, but more dangerous fights out there that he's hoping to get? You know, he's the guy that's been chanting that he wants Triple G. He does want him. So I like to see that happen. This roadblock is just the roadblock.
Yeah, and I think that's a good fight for him. I liked the fight for him the first time. And the more I interact with Sergio Mora, you know, on Twitter or whatever, he was my favorite guy on the Contender, but as we've gone along, the more I've interacted with him, the less I like him. And so I'm hoping Danny Jacobs, like, beats him up for 8-9 rounds and then knocks him out. I think, though, what will happen is we'll see a lot of jab, a lot of 1-2 from Danny, maybe some body shots. It'll be some holding from Mora and some spoiling. But I don't think Danny walks into any bad punches like the last time. You know, I think we'll see a really strong technical fighter, probably fighting out of both stances. So we'll see a lot of jab out of, you know, the right jab and the left jab from Danny. I think he wins a clear decision. I'd like to see him get the stoppage because that's what you do with an older fighter, particularly when you're getting experience from, like this fight's supposed to be. But, and I got to say, you know, I was thinking about this today, just thinking about what we're going to talk about on the show. Him, Danny knocking out Kid Chocolate in like 90 seconds and then beating Sergio Martinez or Sergio Mora twice, particularly if he stops him twice. Everything else after that's gravy. I don't even care about a Triple G fight. Had to, both those guys getting beat by Danny makes me really happy. I want to see him fight Triple G, but but honestly, for me personally, I just those two things are very satisfying.
Well, we don't watch boxing for your personal, you know, for your personal join us, okay, here, Gabriel. I want to see him step out, you know, get past the Sergio Mora and move on to the bigger fights, BJ Saunders and Triple G's and whatnot. Those are the fights that I think we're all looking for. But I know where you're going. I know where you're coming from, especially with Kid Chocolate.
Gravy.
Right, exactly. Man.
Sometimes I watch it at slow motion so that it's 3 minutes. You know, it takes 3 minutes to knock him out. But generally, you know, I just watch the 90 seconds and I'm just real happy. But
Chocolate? He's opening up a gym, I heard, in Las Vegas with Memo Heredia. You know, that was the rumor. That was the rumor that I was told. Who knows? Who knows?
All we know, he melted. The back knee gym?
It's called the meltdown gym. 90 seconds of meltdown. Danny Jacobs figured it out. You know, they figured it out. You know, how many licks does it take to get to the center? Only 90 seconds. Only 90 seconds. Anyway,
everybody sign a waiver in case they. You know, anything goes wrong, the memo's
right, no, Memo already has it on tap. Memo already has it on tap, on a copy and paste already about the excuse. You know, he's going to blame the other guy. He's going to blame Kid Chocolate. That's what he'll do. He'll just say, hey, there's too much rich chocolate in it, so it's his fault. He contaminated.
So there was the name of the gym.
His gym.
Fall Guys. That's it.
No, the contamination gym. The contamination gym.
Oh, God.
You know, why even try to come up with another name? The name, give it a name ready that it has the excuse. So if anybody asks, well, there you go. And he knew what he was walking into. The contamination gym, right? Whatever, right? Anyways, let's see Sergio Mora and Danny Jacobs. I just want to see it get past. I hope it's not eye gouging. I hope we can get through it. I'm hoping that it's going to be, you know, because there was excitement with the first fight. Let's got to admit, I didn't really care for the first fight, but then when it happened, there was excitement. So let's see if Sergio Mora comes out there wanting to do the same thing, because even though he did clip them, he caught Danny Garcia being careless. I think that Sergio Mora thinks I can knock him out. I have power. I think he thinks that that's kind of just, you know, the way Kell Brook believes that his size is going to be the big difference with Triple G. So here we have two guys that possibly are maybe delusional or could be right. Their gamble may be right. We'll find out this weekend, right?
Yeah. Yep.
There we go, man. All right, guys. We always have a good night. Always enjoy coming on, leaving the ring with my host here, Gabriel Montoya. Don't forget, tomorrow night is a 2-minute round with your host, Felipe Leon and David Avila and Baby Reed. And you got Mondays. Hey, the next round is back Monday at 4 p.m. with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya here. And every Wednesday you got, not every Wednesday, But Wednesdays, you got Leaving the Ring here with myself, Dave Duenas, a.k.a. 97 Rough, and Mr. Dark Cloud, Gabriel Montoya. Hey, have a good weekend with your family, people. And remember, don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer.
Peace.